Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Time now for the DenverFan.com front page.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Taking a look at the top stories in Denver sports taken from your online home for the best opinions and information on the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, Rockies, and more.
What in the name of Dan Issel?
With today's DenverFan.com front page, here's Schlereth and Evans.
News team, assist!
Of Joel Klatt, who'll join us coming up in about 8 minutes. Oh, I must have been nice to James Merrillat. My column got top billing at DenverFan.com.
You got front page again?
That's right. Man. After saving his job in London, Nathaniel Hackett cannot rest easy. The gist of the column is that Frank Reich firing the other day got my attention. That I think we're entering a new era when it comes to NFL owners.
Right.
They are going to be even more impatient than they've been. And you know, NFL owners, you always see 6-7 coaches get fired every year. I think you're going to, but you always would see these coaches would always tend to get, you know, 2-3 years to try to implement their program and everything like that. I get the sense that we're entering an era where more and more NFL owners are going to demand immediate results or else. And the impression of watching the Bronco ownership, Damani Leach, the club president over in London, talking about the Bronco brand, Bronco country, knowing no borders. It truly is an international. I said it the day this ownership group took over. This is an ownership group that wants to do big things. They want to be at the forefront of the NFL's attempt to take over the world. And that involves winning. And it certainly means when you lose, you can't be the butt of jokes around the NFL world and be embarrassing. Nathaniel Hackett, he is coaching for his job by the end of this season. I don't think he is by any means safe. I threw out this scenario. What has to happen for him to guarantee a second year? You can read my scenario at DenverFan.com to save his job. What's yours? What has to happen over the next 9 games in order for Nathaniel Hackett to be here next year?
Well, obviously they've got to win a handful of games.
So you're saying at least 5-4?
Yeah, you got to win a handful of games in this. Yeah, you got to win 4 or 5 games.
Oh, now we're left. 4 and 5. You say 4 and 5 will get it
somewhere,
done.
Somewhere in there. As long it depends on what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
If you win four games and your offense is still scoring 12 points a game, then no, you're not safe. But if you start winning and you start scoring and your offense starts to look efficient and Russell Wilson starts to play better, you know, and you know, you start to, as Dan Orzlovsky said, build in some freedom into the offense and let him do his thing. Like, yeah, that's a different scenario then.
Will Peterson shares a great story at DenverFan.com. That the father-in-law of former Broncos defensive lineman Domata Peko, sold the winning Powerball, $2 billion Powerball ticket in California.
Uh-huh.
And you know that when you sell a winning ticket like that, the store or the outlet that sells it gets some of the bounty?
I read that. I did not realize that the store gets it. He said at the store he's going to make $1 million.
$1 million. So Domata Peko's father-in-law sold the winning ticket, gets $1 million.
How cool is that?
Did you buy a lottery ticket?
No.
Are you a lottery ticket guy?
No.
Why not? Somebody's got to win.
Yeah, they don't. Those tickets never get sold at the stores I shop at.
What does that mean? What does that
mean? There it is, ladies and gentlemen. The great Mark Schlereth.
It's always like a convenience store where you swing in to get chewing tobacco. I don't chew tobacco. I'm not running into the convenience store. It's not.
Seems like you have a particular image in mind of the typical lottery ticket buyer.
No. I'm just saying that most of the, it's always like some small convenience
store. You're stereotyping lottery ticket buyers.
No, I'm stereotyping where the lottery ticket, the winning lottery tickets go to stores I don't frequent.
Okay.
Convenience store. I don't go to convenience
store. You're not a convenience store guy?
No.
But they're convenient. You seem to be a guy that likes convenience, no?
No.
You like to make it difficult, huh?
No.
What do you mean?
I don't grocery shop. I don't do any of that.
I don't do these things that normal people do. I have people for that.
If they sold lottery tickets in Starbucks, then I'd have a shot. See what I'm saying?
I got you. Jake Shapiro was in San Antonio the other day with the Nuggets. And was there to cover the game and got a lot of great behind-the-scenes type stuff going on with this team. Nuggets on the road tonight in Indiana at 7-3.
Uh-huh.
Do you get the sense that the Nuggets are ready to really take off? Put together a big winning streak.
Yeah, I think.
Win 15 out of 20, something like that.
I think the Nuggets are completely capable of that and based upon, you know, listen to the sound after the games that we've watched and watched them, you know, take 2 of 2 of San Antonio, I do think they understand how they're built and how they have to function to win. And they're going to have to put stretches of defense together. They're going to have to let defense lead the offense. They're going to be, you know, they're going to have to be excited about whoever's got the hot hand is going to be the guy that's going to score. Like, I buy into that. I buy into the fact that they could do that.
Yeah, Jake got a lot of good stuff. Did a interview with Michael Porter Jr. We learned how Michael Malone calls Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray PB&J, the way they get along, the way they play, the chemistry. So good stuff there from Jake. He got a chance to enjoy a Whataburger while he was down there.
Yeah. Dude, Whataburgers are good.
Whataburgers are great.
Right.
They are great. Anyway, check it all out. Good stuff there from Jake Shapiro on his trip with the Nuggets to San Antonio. Check that out at denverfan.com. Plenty of new content throughout the course of the day. Check out my column. Everything else, as always, free at denverfan.com. Joining us now for his weekly visit, the one and only Joel Klatt. He is presented by Audi Flatirons, lead college football analyst at Fox Sports. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning. What's up? How we doing, guys?
Well, we're doing really good. You know, I think Mike and I were talking about this, that Nathaniel Hackett said, hey, listen, we got to go on a win streak, right? We got to put 3, 4, 5 games together, get on a win streak. Anything that you have seen, especially through the last game, through the Jacksonville game in London, that would lead you to believe that this is a team that could go on a 3-4 game win streak?
No, not in particular. I don't think that they're... Mark, I don't think that they're good enough on the offensive line to do that. I think to go on a win streak, you've got to be able to dominate up front, and they don't do that. Now they're going to be banged up at center now, and we'll see what happens there. So I remain, you know, pessimistic about the possibility of a win streak. I don't think that I've seen anything from this team that would suggest that they're going to enter into any sort of consistency. And in order to win any stretch of games in a row, you either need an incredibly weak schedule or you need to play with an incredible amount of consistency. And that's something that has eluded these Broncos, in particular on the offensive side. So I think Nathaniel Hackett is hoping for a win streak, but nothing would suggest that they're about to go on it. None of their play. Their defense is going to get a little bit worse now without Bradley Chubb. And that would suggest, like, okay, the offense needs to take a step forward. Well, what have we seen that would tell you that the offense is going to take a step forward? I don't see it. I think that they played the long game with Bradley Chubb. I don't think that they were going to sign him to a long-term deal. It was pretty clear. So at that point, it's like you're either, you know, a one-loss team and very much in the race and you're going to keep him around, or they were going to deal him and try to get some draft picks, and that's what they did.
Offensive line play isn't sexy to talk about. There are no stats really involved with it. Nothing with fantasy football that involves offensive line play. But yet, when I hear Mark talk about how bad the offensive line play is around the NFL, when I see Tom Brady and Matt Stafford struggling mightily this year compared to last year and the obvious differences in their offensive line, I'm curious, as somebody who calls top college football games every week, what is the state of offensive line play in college? And does it explain why it might be so bad in the pros?
Well, I think what you have is different styles of offense. And I think it's hard for offensive linemen. You know, we used to talk about this with quarterbacks. It's like these college systems. It was hard to translate into the NFL. I think the same can be said for offensive linemen. And the biggest difference, Mike, is the fact that the RPO, the run pass option, is I don't want to say it's way more prevalent in college football, but it's very different in college football. And it's because the rules are different. So the rule in college football is that you can be 3 yards down the field as an ineligible receiver and you're still fine. So that's the buffer, the margin. So in an RPO, you can come off the ball and actually block those run plays. Because of that, what you have is it's very rare for a college offensive lineman to have to just sit in legitimate pass protection. Because they run those RPOs so often, even on third and obvious, they're running some sort of RPO where you're trying to put some defender in conflict. And because of that, the offensive lineman's job becomes a little bit more simplistic. So then they go to the NFL and the buffer is only 1 yard. Okay, so the 1 yard buffer for ineligible downfield is 1 yard. Well, because of that, you can't be as prevalent in your play selection in obvious passing situations with the RPO. Which means that you've got to be in a traditional pass set more often. I don't think that that's what's developed in the college game, the traditional pass set. It's so rare to find a guy that is really good when they've got to throw the football, that he can defend both a power rush and a speed rush. Now, granted, that's rare at the next level as well, but it's just not being developed. And so when these guys get to the next level, what ends up happening is that they're more raw than they ever have been, even if they're more talented or more physically gifted, right? They're more raw. They don't have the reps necessary to be really good in pass protection. I think that that's a huge issue. There's also the issue in college football of the wide hash marks. When you've got the wide hash marks, what happens is that you have more space. When you have more space, you can exploit the defensive structure. And what you can do is you can basically tell yourself, we are not going to run the football unless we have an advantageous run box. Okay, so unless we can block everybody in the run front, we're going to throw the ball out and try to exploit the space on the outside. In the NFL, it's not as easily defined. So I think that you have to run the football against what I would call the heavy run box more often in the NFL than you do in college football. For all of those reasons, and those are, by the way, you know, some of them personnel related and others just structure of the sport and rule related. I think all of those reasons are why I think that we've seen a deterioration of the offensive line position and why it's so hard for these NFL teams to actually find good offensive linemen.
Hey, you know, I want to ask you, because I got in this tete-a-tete, if you will, on Twitter just about the RPO game, and you know far more about it than I do, but I would tell you, like, I always think of RPO is you've got an option to hand it to a running back. You're putting a defensive end or a tackle or whoever in conflict, right? You're making them make a decision. Are you going to surf this? Are you going to pitch down and take it? How are you going to react to that? And then you're also looking at a second level defender. If I can put that guy in a conflict, you know, I can throw behind him on a little drift route or whatever the case may be. Or I also almost have this triple option where I can pull it as a quarterback and run, right? So that kind of is RPO, you know, 101, if you will. How do you call it when they don't have a running back in empty? Do you still call it an RPO when the quarterback has an option to run it, but he can throw it as well? Is that, like, do you define that differently? Because I have no idea.
Well, I do, but only in terms of when the decision is made. So for me, there are pre-snap RPOs and there are post-snap RPOs.
Okay,
what you explained initially was a post-snap RPO. You're going to get into a set and you're going to try to put somebody in conflict. And you're going to put them in conflict post-snap. Okay, so you're going to put usually a support player, and by your offensive structure and personnel group, you're going to try to isolate a particular defender and then put the quarterback's eyes on that player. And during the fake, you're going to try to make that defender wrong that's in conflict post-snap. Then there's what you're talking about out of an empty set, which is more of a pre-snap ratio run-pass option. So now the quarterback has to decide before the ball is snapped whether he's going to run it or not. So what you see sometimes in college football is like this empty set where you've got either a 3x2 or even a 4x1. And what you have is usually it markets three plays, not two. In that instance, if it's a pre-snap RPO, there's usually three options, one to the right, one to the left, and the quarterback. So, for instance, right, if you're going to get into it, and you see it on short yardage sometimes, you see it on two-point plays a lot, what you see in college football is that you'll put four receivers over to, like, let's say the right side. Well, if there's four defenders over there, then you're like, okay, we're not going to throw it over there. They've got defenders. Now I've got five offensive linemen and me, the quarterback. Well, if they've got six players in front of me, I don't like that, okay? So they're 6 for 6 and 4 for 4. Well, that means there's a one-on-one on the other side. So now I'm going to go exploit that one-on-one, and I'm going to throw that slant. Okay, now let's say they kind of like walk out that linebacker towards the single receiver side because maybe it's Marvin Harrison Jr. or somebody that you're like, man, we just can't allow him to have a one-on-one. Well, now there's only five guys in the what I would call the box. Well, now my five offensive linemen can block those, so I'm just going to give a little quarterback draw. Well, let's say the support player on the right side of the four receiver side, he wants to walk in a little bit, and he wants to be kind of play a halfway. Well, now I've got 3 for 3 on a block, and I can get to the edge with that fourth guy, so I'm just going to pitch that screen out there. So when it comes to an empty set, think of it as a pre-snap decision from the quarterback. He's got three options. It can be any of those, and it's all based on ratio. If you're thinking about a traditional RPO, that's a post-snap where you're putting a particular defender in conflict, generally the support player, based on your structure and your eyes as a quarterback, are going to go to him right away after the snap and you make him wrong.
Oh, my gosh. I need a cigarette. I need a cigarette here. That was freaking awesome. That was, I'm all over.
Hey, make it a 100. Hey,
he just took his shirt off, too.
Yeah, it is getting hot in here.
I know you reached him when he said,
hey, Johnny, we got an air conditioner. Can you turn the air up?
Joel Klatt joining us, presented by Audi Flatirons. More rhetoric, more taunting, more Pete Carroll, smug Pete Carroll, talking about how great Geno Smith is. And this came up, the idea that Geno Smith has no problem wearing a wristband during a game, where apparently Russell Wilson does have a problem wearing a wristband. Mark said yesterday, I think, I'm not putting words in your mouth, that it's kind of an ego thing, that you don't want to look like you need to have that crutch, if you will, having the wristband, the plays on your wrist. Explain it to me from a quarterback's perspective. Did you play with a wristband? What are the advantages of it? Does it make a big deal that Russell Wilson doesn't want to have one on his wrist?
Well, I think it comes down to your process. I think that you can operate a little quicker if you are using a wristband, because the coach can just tell you a number in your headset and you can get right to it and look at it and go. I know that in some cases it is an ego thing, because, like, for instance, we used a wristband, but it was only for the 2-minute situation, right? So it can be situational. So we wanted, so all the skill position players had the wristband so that I could just call the 2-minute situation quickly and I didn't have to signal. Because if you start signal and you give the same signals all the time, like under, lion, you know, Ohio, all these different concepts, then at some point they're going to be like, oh, I know that signal. So you wanted to have the ability to basically like have a wristband, and then you can just basically signal, you know, numbers in a way that you can get the play called on the outside. In the NFL, it becomes a little bit of an ego thing, because And I don't want to say that this is always the case. Again, like, it's always so specific to the team and what they want to do. However, I would tell you that the verbiage can get lengthy in some of these offenses, where it can be hard to regurgitate what you just heard. Okay? And certainly young quarterbacks have a hard time with this. So sometimes the most lengthy play calls, they'll just put on the wristband so that they can just give a number and then the quarterback can read that in the huddle. I mean, this is going to be a poor example, but some of these formations in the offenses can get so extravagant that it can be difficult to regurgitate it. And if you just hear this in your headset and then you've got to get in there and just say it right away and you've got to say it perfectly because it's all very specific, you know, you can be like in Trey Wright nasty, Z short, explode to triple right, U disco, X nasty, 200 jet, X out, Y spacing, check 96 power. And then it's like, if you just hear that as a quarterback and then you like put your knee down in the huddle and you're like, wait, what was the initial formation that we wanted to shift out of? Because remember, that's very specific because you're looking for a very specific defensive look to then shift out of to get into a matchup where you're advantageous, maybe with that X out or Ohio or whatever you're going to run on that single receiver side. You've got the spacing concept, which can be your foundation. But if you don't get that look, you can always check the power. So there's all these things. But it can be hard if you just hear that in your headset, and then the time runs out, and the coach is clicked out. So a lot of times, like for a young player in particular at the quarterback position, they'll sit there and practice, and they hear a play call from like a John Gruden type with all of that language, and they're like, oh, crap, like what was that again? Well, in some of those lengthier calls, you can put it on a wristband, and I have seen some quarterbacks scoff at the notion that they would need a wristband for the lengthier call.
So on that lengthy call, all that Nathaniel Hackett would have to do is say two, and Russell Wilson
that's
looks
right.
down,
and then he can just read it,
and then he reads what you
read
just
it
said.
To like, oh, okay, now I understand it's Trey Wright nasty in nasty X short, you know, burst to triple right, U disco X nasty, you know, blah blah blah.
Real quick though, what is it about a quarterback that like if it's not ego driven because Kirk Cousins doesn't want to wear a wristband, and they've had that conversation because I don't like. I just have never liked it. I don't like that. And I don't think it's ego-driven from Kirk. It's just
yeah.
So for a quarterback, like, are there any disadvantages in your mind to having a wristband?
I know that some guys have said that they don't like a wristband on their forearm because they feel like it hurts their ball security, like if they've got to tuck it. I know that, like, guys can be very particular about the way that their arms feel in terms of how they throw the football. Like, for instance, I could not throw the ball with a long sleeve undershirt. I couldn't do it. I don't know why, but I couldn't do it. So it didn't matter what the temperature was. I had to have a short sleeve shirt on under my pads. Now, a wristband didn't bother me, but maybe somebody's got something like that where it's like, listen, I don't want that plastic piece on the inside of my forearm. For if I tuck the ball, now it becomes slippier. You know, I've got more tact, if you will, with my forearm against the ball, against my ribs. It can be something along those lines. There's any number of reasons. That's why, I don't want to blame Russell and say, like, oh, well, you know, he's got to do this, and that means he's selfish. Like, there can be a lot of different things. And by the way, this is Pete, man. Pete's always been this guy. Like, ever since he was at USC, you know, like he's Mr. Energizer Bunny and positivity, but only with his guys, and he'll throw some shade out over other people or programs. I just always go back to that. I don't know if you guys remember this, but like late, and I think it was 2008 or something like that, Jim Harbaugh had just gotten to Stanford, and Stanford goes in and like beats USC badly, and Harbaugh comes out and Pete Carroll was like, what's your deal, man? And Jim just looks at him and was like, what's your deal?
I remember you know, that.
So like
yeah,
Pete,
yeah.
Pete's got a little of that in him where, you know, there's some showman in him to some degree, and this might be a case of that as well.
All right, Joel, who you got this week?
I've got Ohio State and Indiana. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around why. It's a 40-point spread, but, you know, we'll go and do our best.
Yeah, I love it.
This is love so- it. Oh, Ohio State, Indiana.
I just listen.
So beneath me.
If there's nothing else, guys, I'm going to give you my honest opinion.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what we account on every single week. Thank you, Joel.
See you, buddy.
Thank you.
Joel Klatt, presented by Audi Flatirons. In case you missed it, Dan Orlovsky, who called the Jacksonville Broncos game in London, had some great insight into Russell Wilson. Share that with you next.
You're going to need a bigger boat. It's time for Schlereth and Evans' Big Story of the Day.
Why is it that you're so big?
Here's Schlereth and Evans with this morning's biggest story in Denver sports.
Big mistake. Big. Huge.
Well, the biggest story of the day is the news that Mark is going to be calling Broncos Raiders next week for Fox.
That is huge news.
Not only do you get to dive into the film, but you'll get a chance to talk to Russ, Hackett. Oh, God, I'm going to put together such a cheat sheet of questions that I need answered.
Let's run.
You're all over.
I'm going to need you to do some stuff for me.
Okay. Here comes the airplane. Okay.
And if you benefit from it, great. But these are the answers I need. That Broncos country needs. But, yeah, looking forward to that. Plus, we'll have the phrase, it pays. Mark will get a chance to go on and irritate Raider fans. By the way, I can't wait.
Did we get anybody on the text line for a Raider fan?
Raider fan has gone underground.
Right. They are so... They're not listening to the radio. No. They're not doing anything right now.
They are so full of shame.
They're like me without internet at the house right now. Can't do anything.
I can't wait. Knowing how many millions of Raider fans around the country are going to tune into that game next Sunday, not knowing who the broadcaster is, and when they see your face and see your name, what their reaction's going to be. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Oh, to be a fly on the wall in those living rooms. Just the curses that are going to be. What?
Why does this guy get to do our game?
He's calling the game? Oh.
Are you kidding me?
Here's
the thing about me calling games. Like, I like winners. Right? I like teams that are playing well. And if you're playing well, I'm going to talk about you.
It doesn't matter. Raider fan is among the most defensive and thin-skinned out there. And their immediate reaction is just going to be like, no, not Stank, no.
That's true.
He hates us. And then, of course, early on in the broadcast, you'll mention that you went 11-1 against him. And, oh, it'll be beautiful. Just beautiful. That might be the phrase it pays.
No, I'm not. I don't want to rub it in. I mean, everybody knows I was great.
Russell Wilson. Dan Orlovsky was on with us earlier this morning. Of course, he called the game, the London game, Broncos in Jacksonville, and you asked him, hey, full week of studying Russ, talking with Russ, watching Russ play, what were your impressions?
Yeah, I think for the majority of the season, number one, he's really struggled to see simple things, you know, simple concepts versus simple defenses. And Mark, I've kind of phrased it as you either can't see or you don't know what you're supposed to be looking at. Meaning, hey, and part of this is Nathaniel Hackett calling a play, and he expects the play to be run like X, and because that's how he's learned it, and that's how he's watched other guys operate it, and then Russell maybe doesn't see it the same way. So a big part of that is learning how he sees it or how he wants to learn it, so to speak. So that's been a big struggle for them. Russ has missed throws that he historically has not missed. And they've been in some tough situations because all their negative plays. Now, in the game, started off obviously very rough. And some of those forced throws, you saw the interception. He didn't see some things early on. And then really the 98-yard drive kind of kick-started some stuff. The ball came out of his hands so much more quickly. He got through number two, number three, way more efficiently. The deep ball to Hamler was huge. So you got to feel pretty good about how that game ended up going and finishing and using it to say, all right, what was different in that 30 minutes of football in comparison to the great majority of the season that both Hackett's got to learn and Russell's got to get a really good level of communication with?
What a line. We all year long, we've been trying to figure out what's wrong? What is going on? Where's the disconnect with Russ and this offense? And Orlovsky breaks it down into either Russ can't see or he doesn't know what he's supposed to be looking at.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it is?
Oh, I think it's probably a little bit of both. So I think there are times where you are looking at your back on track plays, however you want to qualify them as, right? Or just
Hackett's called them that.
Yeah.
Get back on track plays. Yeah.
Get back on track plays. So having talked to Hackett about it, Hackett's get back on track plays really, and pretty much everybody's get back on track plays are in that box from tight end to tight end. So if you're in a two tight end formation or tight end to ghost tight end, so, you know, you think about that five offensive linemen, tight end, right? You take a box and you go straight from that up the field about 8 yards, that box in there, an 8 yard box. Those are my get back on track. Whatever I call in there, whether I'm hitting a shallow cross or whether I'm hitting just a spot route over the center, you know, to my tight end, that's what Scat Hank is. Like, those are my get back on track plays, and I should have about an 80% completion percentage average in that box. So that's where I want to throw the ball when we're out of sync or out of rhythm. So if you're shorter in stature and you're getting push up front because your offensive line is not firm enough at the point of attack, and you're in a three-step drop or even a shallow five-step drop, sometimes you just don't see that. That's where a lot of this is my Doug Flutie conversation, where the quick passing game had to be outside the numbers for Doug. That's where he could see it best, because there's a natural window that opens up between your offensive line, your guards in your center, and your tackle who's deeper setting. So there's this window there, and that's where he needed his get on track plays to be.
Well, you know who dominated as a short quarterback in that box that you're talking about? Drew Brees. He dominated there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Russell Wilson's trying to get. Two.
Got to be able to
and
see
it's
it.
Been painful.
Right. And sometimes I think it's not so much, and Joel's talked about this, it's not so much seeing your receiver open up, but knowing where he's supposed to be,
right,
and seeing the defense open up and going, oh, I can throw it there.
Even if I don't truly see him.
Even if I don't truly see him exactly, I know where he is supposed to be. So, yeah, and I think that's part of the learning curve that we've got going on right now.
All right, coming up, more from Orlowski. Asked him his impressions of Nathaniel Hackett. And when he sits down from Nathaniel Hackett, does he feel like he's sitting down across from a legitimate NFL head coach? Orlowski's answer coming up next.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
To some of the really great answers that we got from Dan Orlowski, and I just love the idea of being able to talk to a guy who, and that's why I'm so excited about you calling Broncos Raiders next Sunday for Fox, is just the idea that you're going to be completely immersed in all things Broncos next week and get a chance to talk to Russell Wilson and talk to Nathaniel. Well, you could talk to Nathaniel Hackett anytime you want, as you've made abundantly clear over the last several months. But still, it'll be really cool. And Orlowski, having had a chance to visit with Nathaniel Hackett, I asked him, I said, when you sit down from Nathaniel Hackett, do you feel like you're sitting down across from a legitimate NFL head coach? His answer.
Yeah, I think for the better way, and I've got to figure this out a little bit more, and we're trying to make sure that everybody on the offense is comfortable, and how do we continue to challenge these guys but also encourage them? So, you know, I like Hackett. I was impressed with him. I don't think he was sitting there trying to point the fingers at anybody. I think he was taking a relatively high level of accountability. And I said this on the broadcast, and I kind of stand by it because obviously there was a lot of noise around his job. And my overall theory on it is this, or thought on it is this. If, and this is all due respect to the ownership and the general manager, if they're going to sit there and say, well, part of our struggles is because of the newness of the whole situation, then firing the coach is going to just create a new situation next year. And you can't fall back on that as a reasoning and or excuse anymore. So I was impressed by in our time with him.
I get what he's saying there. But we have the benefit of knowing what first-time head coaches look like, those that don't make it. And if the signs are there, you got to move on. And if it means you got to start the whole process over again, well, so be it. Because the worst thing that you can do is stick with a guy that it's not going to work out just in the name of continuity. Just right. Because you're afraid of having to start over again. You got, sometimes just, as we've learned here, unfortunately, in Broncos country, we become experts on it. If you got a first-time head coach and it's not going to work out because we know what the signs are that it's not going to work out, you don't bring them back for another year just for continuity purposes, just because you don't want to start the process all over again.
But if you see signs that he is really, like, he's a good coach and he's got good schemes and he can scheme people open, and you can look at yourself critically enough as a franchise saying, we haven't provided him with a good enough offensive line. We haven't provided him with some good enough players, you know, blah, blah, blah. We don't have enough depth on our roster. Then there's that aspect of it that you would look at yourself as a franchise and say, we have got to give that guy more time. Remember, if we went through the same process, if the Philadelphia Eagles went through the same process that we're going through right now, last year, when they started the season 2-5, they would have fired Nick Sirianni. Now he's the toast of the town. And he was under a lot of scrutiny.
Sure.
A lot of scrutiny. He made some changes and he, you know, play calling and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm sure if we went through or we picked our brains or we asked the text line to go through coaches who started off poorly and became great coaches, I'm sure they could be able to come up with a couple of those coaches, Mike. By the way, I mean, we got so deep with Dan and other things. We've only done a few Tell Me Why I'm Wrongs, and I've crushed everybody, but we really have not been able to do as many as we normally would do.
Yeah, I know, we did. Some of the good ones and bring them up tomorrow. How about
that?
We
can do a couple
also,
tomorrow.
We have a new segment debuting tomorrow.
Do we now?
Actually, I'll get to that in just one quick second.
Okay.
Because he said something about Nathaniel Hackett reminding him a lot of Doug Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Peterson, Super Bowl winning coach.
Sure.
Now the head coach of Jacksonville. You've done some Doug Peterson games. Do you see some similarities between Doug Peterson and Nathaniel Hackett?
Yeah, I think it's a good or it's an apt comparison that Doug will get into that meeting very confident in what he's doing, but very honest about where he's at, where they are at as a football team, and honest about his players. You know, it's not like a lot of that stuff. It's very much like Bill Belichick. When you sit down with Bill Belichick, Bill Belichick will say, hey, listen, this didn't come from me, meaning don't credit this to me, but if you need to use this in the broadcast, be my guest, right? And good and bad, Mike, good and bad. Like, I'll give you a good for Mac Jones. He goes, I have never had a rookie where I could put more on his plate and not have an issue with it. And Doug Peterson will tell you the same thing about his quarterback, where his quarterback is, what he needs to improve on, where they are as a football team, what they need to improve on. And he's like, what I have to do a better job on. Very, just very conversational, very, very candid about where they're at.
When Bill was talking about Squishy Mac, did you only hear this?
Yeah, I did. I was like, he could have just given me the answers to the test, and all I could think of was, yeah, that's all I could think about.
Day by day.
When I was working, well, hey, think of it. You think that's bad? Think about me sitting down with Squishy Mac last year.
Oh, right. You couldn't get past it.
So here, let's play this game. So, Mac, his name's Mac, right? Yeah, Squishy. Last name, his first name's Mac. I think his first name's Squishy and his last name's Mac. So, Mac, tell me what it is that you look at critically of your own game right now that you need to improve upon. That's all I heard. Give me like three in a row. You need to improve upon, Mac. Oh, that's interesting. You got absolutely not one note written down. So, Mac, you know, you got that cover two and you threw it in the turkey hole. That was a great throw. Tell me kind of what you read on that.
So stupid. So stupid.
I know.
But so funny. Had no
I'm
notes.
Here.
I went into that game with no notes.
No notes.
I have not one note. So debuting a new segment tomorrow. New feature.
Okay.
Called What Does the Film Say?
Oh.
What does the film say? We know how much you love diving into the film.
Right.
So I have an assignment for you tomorrow.
Okay.
I want you to look at, because we got Derrick Henry on tap tomorrow, Sunday. Derrick Henry's, here he comes.
Yeah.
Broncos really struggled in the last game with Travis Etienne. They really struggled against the run game. I want you.
By the way, we had Bradley Chubb back then, right?
I want you.
Holding the point.
I want you. Setting the edge.
Setting the edge.
I want you to look at the film and tell me why the Broncos struggled so much against Travis Etienne. And why that could be a real problem against Derrick Henry. Okay?
Okay. So just you want me to do another hour of work upon the already ridiculous amount of work I have to do this to prep the my game?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Great.
Because here's how I look at it. You put absolutely no work into this show. Okay? None.
I put all kinds of work
into
this show.
You put no work. You
put all kinds of work.
You are correct when you say I run the show, you run around in the show.
Right, yeah.
Fever and I do all the work for this show.
Well,
you just show up and you be Mark Schlereth for 3 hours.
Yeah,
you need to do some work.
There's a different work.
So you need to do some more work.
I'm doing work on NFL and on sports stuff.
Sports stuff.
I got sports stuff. I got sports stuff work.
Yeah,
you manage. You put these incredible rundowns together. You know how impressed I am by digging into the rundown and seeing what you've come up with.
That's right.
Yeah.
You never look at it. I don't even know why Fever even prints a copy for you.
Because I have to know when my live reads are coming. That's the only thing I look at. Everybody knows that.
Man. You pay as much attention to my rundown as you paid attention to what Squishy Mac had to say.
Yeah, exactly. Zero.
Zero. We look forward to your film breakdown.
All right.
Tomorrow, we look forward to the Players Club coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.